I'd like to welcome you to this afternoon's session. I'm not Jessica Moorman, who's supposed to chair the session because she has laryngitis, so I've come in, but we have a very interesting session here on the future of Christian environmentalism. And you'll notice the first two talks are a little bit pessimistic, talking about death, but the third one gets a little bit more hopeful. But I want to introduce the first speaker here, who is Lowell Bliss, and he's with Eden Vigil Institute. And I just found out talking to him that I have some connections with him that I didn't realize, and I'm sure he has a very interesting presentation, and he is actually not using PowerPoint, so maybe that'll be a relief to you. So welcome, Lowell.
I appreciate that. I am Lowell Bliss. I'm the director of the Eden Vigil Institute for Environmental Leadership at William Carey International University. My American-Canadian connection is that 5 years ago, we moved up from Kansas to Port Colborne, Ontario, which is in the Niagara Peninsula. Our house is just 15 minutes walking distance from the north shore of Lake Erie. So what I tell all my old friends is that in 2018, we moved from Kansas and now we live in the deep south. This paper is entitled The Death of Environmentalism, Creation Care Edition. I first met Catherine Hayhoe, IPC climatologist and University of Toronto alum, at the Urbana Student Missions Conference in 2009. Urbana is a conference held every 3 years during the Christmas break that in its heyday drew over 20,000 students from across the US and Canada. I last saw Catherine, not last night, but the previous last time I saw Catherine, at the COP27 Climate Summit in Egypt last November. And I told her, hey, they've invited me back to Urbana after a decade, and they want me to speak on the exact same topic that I spoke on 10 years ago. And Catherine said, don't do it, Lowell. She said, the world's changed, you've changed, students have changed. For one thing, they all know the science now. So if in the last 10 years you've been involved in science education, Catherine says, good on you, good job. I went back to Urbana looking for signs of how the evangelical creation care movement has evolved, at least over the last decade. There was little about creation care in the plenary sessions and only 5 creation care breakout seminars. In one of the talks, the presenter started with the biblical basis for creation care, slides where she could read from Genesis 1, 2, and 3, Colossians 1. Those were the exact same slides that I heard Ed Brown and Ben Lowe, myself for that matter, use back at Urbana 2009. Nothing wrong with repetition. But back then, those verses felt like conferring biblical legitimacy on those Christian students, many of them in the sciences, who had a yearning to come out as environmentalists. Or it felt like evangelism. Or it felt like milk to the movement. At Urbana 2022, where was the discipleship? Where was the deeper dive into scripture for the sustenance that we need now that the global outlook appears more despairing? When the presenter quoted Psalm 24:1, the earth is the Lord's and all that it contains, to tell you the truth, it sounded like the land acknowledgement that we read every Sunday morning at my parish. We live on the traditional territory of Adonai, I suppose. But how have we grown in our capacity for environmental truth and for ecological reconciliation? In another presentation, they played a YouTube video about what is environmental engineering, in which the narrator claims the profession boils down to 3 main things. The first thing is improving the overall quality of the world around us. Sounds good. But number 1 was protecting people from the environment, and number 2 was protecting the environment from people. Why would we continue to perpetuate a distancing framework between people and the environment? And then why characterize it in the mission of God as something inherently conflictual? In 2004, Michael Schellenberger and Ted Nordhaus famously presented a paper entitled The Death of Environmentalism. Over the last 15 years, they wrote, Environmental foundations and organizations have invested hundreds of millions of dollars into combating global warming. We have strikingly little to show for it, they said. They conclude, what the environmental movement needs more than anything else right now is to take a collective step back to rethink everything. We will never be able to turn things around as long as we understand our failures as essentially tactical and make proposals that are essentially technical. My paper takes its title from their title, but it is the Creation Care Edition, or more specifically, a collective step back to rethink the evangelical creation care movement, particularly in North America. It's been 17 years since the Evangelical Climate Initiative, or 9 years since the Lausanne WEA meetings at Gordon College. ASA has been there from the beginning. And I fear that I would offend someone by failing to mention a particular success over the last 20 years. I certainly intend to sidestep offense by not referring to the death of creation careism, but I will employ a more urgent metaphor, the root boundedness of the evangelical creation care movement. On one hand, a houseplant that has grown enough to become root-bound is a houseplant that has been faithfully and lovingly attended. At that moment before root-boundedness, it is a successful plant. But root-boundedness is a pathology. And the only solution for the horticulturalist is to turn their attention from the plant, if only for a season, to the container. For the sake of this paper, I'll mention only three capacities that, in my experience, evangelicalism has denied the creation care plant over the last two decades. Namely, number one, a capacity for integration with the environmental justice movement. Number two, a capacity to confront Christian nationalism and political conflation. And number three, a capacity to evolve the next step theologically. We abandoned dominionism for the concept of faithful stewardship. Thank God for Francis Schaeffer and Cal DeWitt. But now we need to develop a new biblical anthropology for creatureliness and interconnectedness. And when I say capacity, they just didn't let us go there. There was something in evangelicalism that just didn't let us go there. The immediate impetus for this critique is the COP28 climate summit scheduled for Dubai in December of this year. This year, the big item on the agenda is the first global stocktake. The parties to the Paris Agreement are going to take stock of how much progress they have made aggregately on reducing the emissions of greenhouse gases, how much progress they have made toward the Paris targets of preventing no more than a 2-degree warming, or ideally a 1.51. If the global stocktake is conducted with any degree of honesty, accuracy, and transparency, the COP will have to admit that in 2022, 7 years after the adoption of the Paris Agreement, greenhouse gas emissions reached a record high, as did ocean temperatures. 2022 proved that emissions did not peak during the pandemic, as we hoped the data was showing. It is a mind-blowing thing to talk, as we did just this month, about the hottest single day in recorded human history. I will be in Dubai at COP28, Lord willing, as the co-director of a Christian Climate Observers Program, an annual partnership of evangelical creation care organizations that bring emerging leaders like Sarah, last year in Egypt, emerging leaders from under-mobilized constituencies to the climate summits as credentialed observers for an immersive and discipled experience. My main function during the program is teacher and discipler. Every morning I conduct the debriefs and devotionals. I always reserve the Tuesday and the Thursday sessions to issues related uniquely to that particular COP. So, for example, last year at COP27, the topic was climate loss and damage. And I had the challenging chore of shepherding the participants through an understanding that loss and damage is not the same thing as climate finance, moving money from developed nations to developing ones for the sake of mitigation and adaptation. No, loss and damage is straight up reparations paying money back for past harms and past irresponsibilities. If an American Christian isn't willing to discuss reparations for slavery, if a Canadian Christian isn't willing to discuss reparations for residential schools, it would be, in my opinion as a Christian discipler, morally dangerous to take up a sign and shout, "What do we want? Climate justice. When do we want it? Now." My sense is that the great temptation for North American evangelicals at COP28 will involve the global stocktake. If we are quick to challenge others but fail to critique ourselves, what's working? What isn't? Where we've grown? Where we haven't? What new denialisms are we ourselves indulging? In 2018, a paper entitled "The Greening of Christianity?" University of Indiana researcher concluded from 20 years of Gallup polling that the needle had hardly moved at all on concern for the environment among evangelical Christians. The news that announced the study included this comment: "The current lack of enthusiasm comes despite high-profile calls for action, such as the encyclical letter on the environment released by Pope Francis in 2015, and despite initiatives by the evangelical Protestant groups, such as the formation of the Evangelical Environmental Network." Unquote. I remember when I floated that paper in an email group of my colleagues, one of the first responses was from a well-known Christian activist in the UK who claimed that's not true of what's happening globally. I assured him that indeed this was an American study. But even among global evangelicals, it's been a decade of lamenting the overwhelming evangelical support for such planetary ravagers as Bolsonaro of Brazil or Scott Morrison of Australia. When Catherine Hayhoe weighed in on the Indiana University study, she said to the effect of, "If they knew how much well-funded and organized opposition we've had to overcome, they would know that breaking even is quite the victory." And it is. But we are left with the fact that breaking even on our mobilization of our fellow human beings, evangelical or otherwise, means nothing to an atmosphere that was most recently measured at 421 parts per million of CO2. Author Victoria Lores attended some of those early creation care meetings at Asable. When I think about the creation care activists I've known, say at the Gordon Conference in 2015, and if I bless the memory of Peter Illian and Chuck Redfern, dear brothers whom we lost to cancer, I can't help but affirm what Lores writes. She writes, "Burnout is almost built into activism. The sheer amount of energy and time and money needed to pull off each campaign is incredible. We choose a particular instrumental change from the millions that need to happen, create a strategy, design the campaign, identify the enemy, come up with an easy enough ask, raise the money, show up for interviews, write blogs, shoot more videos, shout more loudly, and measure success by the number of new names in our database and followers on social media. Because, really, can we measure our success by an aggregate CO2 decline? No," she says, "that's too discouraging. Even with all the movement has accomplished, the CO2 imbalance keeps increasing. So we stay focused on the goals before us, measuring success by metrics that don't matter." There's been some recent studies among young evangelicals, studies and surveys from our friend Bin Low et al., and just last April from Arasha Canada and Tear Fund. Bin believes his findings suggest, quote, "that a generational greening of American evangelicals may indeed be taking place, potentially along with some decoupling of climate attitudes from political identity." I've got two thoughts here. The first is the joke about the despairing pastor discussing his congregation with another pastor and declaring, "I believe we are just a couple funerals away from a revival." The second thought is to recognize, as the researchers themselves caution, that their young evangelicals, in order to get a sample size above the available 26, are those undergraduate students who, as of 2021, are still identifying as evangelical and still choosing to enroll at evangelically aligned Christian universities. I'll let others examine their methodology. My point is that any global stocktake that claims a generational greening of must also account for generational abandoning of. And so, anecdotally, I think of the intern I brought with me to the Gordon Creation Care Conference and to COP21 in Paris. Biology student from Kansas State University, grew up with my kids at an evangelical free church in Manhattan, Kansas. The day after the Trump election in 2016, she and her fiancé were sitting on the couch in our living room weeping. "I just wish we could go back to Paris," she said. Honestly, now with her, I don't know what she thinks of Jesus, but I know she doesn't care a lick for the church. For that matter, she's no longer working in academia or the sciences. If you want to argue against my assessment about which metrics matter and how the evangelical creation care movement matches up against them, I'll let you win. I'm too grieved to do otherwise. Besides, 2 months into the pandemic, I felt like I landed on a helpful and hopeful metaphor. What if we've been more successful than it feels? What if the evangelical creation care movement has successfully mobilized everyone that God gave them, everyone that had the capacity to be mobilized? Certainly, we've been a hardworking and faithful bunch. And let's give a special shout out to the Lausanne WEA Creation Care Network for their 10-year campaign. So good job, Ed and Dave and Chris and Toronto's own Jasmine Kwong. But what if we've maxed out our capacity? What if we've become root bound? I tried to front load much in my introduction. My main points are, number one, we need to do our own global stock take as a creation care movement and not just advocate for an honest global stock take among the Paris Agreement parties, nor just lament about the obvious obstructionism of MAGA Christianity. Secondly, I argue for the metaphor of root boundedness because I believe it rightly honors what has been successful in the last 20 years. And number two, it suggests a way forward for growth that has been stymied. Address the container, not the plant. Provide something more capacious and healthy. I also gave three examples of where creation care advocates could start in cracking open the evangelical container. Lack time to develop them here, except briefly. First, we've been largely incurious about environmental justice. We landed on what really did seem like a perfect term, creation care. Those who believe God created the earth should be first in line to take care of it, our old friend Fred Gluck used to say. But then we were surprised when we couldn't recruit people of color to attend our creation care conferences. They all seemed to gravitate around this term, environmental justice. Talking about climate change was hard enough in our churches, but to do so from a justice frame felt like a non-starter, especially when the likes of John MacArthur was publishing his screed, Social Justice in the Gospel. We were being strategic, we thought, in messaging about providing green jobs or creation care as a pro-life issue. But what if a call to justice was the very thing, maybe the only thing, that the Holy Spirit was ready to empower? I'm burned out over trying to provide a creation care annotation to the Republican Party platform, particularly when they didn't even care to write one themselves in 2020. A second constriction of the evangelical container for the creation care plan is Christian nationalism. Elections have consequences. For the Paris Agreement, for the planet, for evangelical mobilization, the election of Donald Trump had consequences. The research of Baylor University's Perry and Whitehead revealed that 78% of white American evangelicals are either Christian nationalist ambassadors or accommodators, with plenty of election data to show that they are reliable Republican voters. I do believe the French delegation at the climate summits were relieved by the election of Joe Biden, but they seemed disappointed that they had to retire their favorite and most snarky display at the French Pavilion. Hashtag make the world great again. The Paris Agreement is a cooperative, voluntary, goodwill initiative. America First makes no more sense than China First or Qatar First. America First makes no more sense at a climate summit than it does in Christianity itself. Instead of confronting Christian nationalism directly, I think we in the creation care movement have used it as an excuse. When an interviewer asks us about evangelical resistance to creation care, we say it isn't all evangelicals. Look at evangelical youth or global evangelicals. This allows us to claim that those evangelicals who resist climate action are acting out of their politics more than their faith. Correlation does not imply causation. But then we fail to ask whether the same thing might be true of young and global evangelicals who have embraced climate action. What if they are acting out of their politics and less out of their faith? Mostly we seem incurious to take the step back and ask why. Is there something in evangelicalism which resulted in such a large percentage of the white American evangelical church being co-opted by authoritarian and anti-intellectual movements? My final example of attention to the container, not the plan, asks us to evolve past thinking that stewardship is the final answer to dominionism. We need to stop fighting the self-protective battle against Len White Jr. That's so 1967. Admittedly, it's a more gracious thing to be a loving steward than a harsh tyrant. But to be a steward is to have a role, not possess an essence. To live in a hierarchy, not in a membership. To be tied by the hip in dualistic platonic sense, closer to the creator than to creatures. Even Wendell Berry in his last book, who devotes a few pages to Genesis 1:28 and the chain of being, prefers that we start thinking in terms of neighborliness with non-human species and the ecosphere. I'll never forget listening to Jay Matanga, Maori from New Zealand, trained theologian, giving a creation care talk to a group of evangelicals in 2021. He dropped phrases like matter infused with some form of life force and, quote, a deep sense of indigenous connection to nature. But at one point, he just had to stop and he just had to say, now this is sounding very New Agey, and I'm coming from a fairly conservative and evangelical background in theology. I've had to wrestle with this. It was only in the last 36 seconds of his talk that this fuller-trained theologian, this World Evangelical Alliance official, finally came out and said, what I'm saying is animism. By relegating a spiritually infused materialism to pagan, low-grade religion so that it's all primitive, this has hampered our ability to contextualize or indigenize the gospel in such a way that it can not only be accepted, but developed like a seedling in new soil in wonderful ways where the grace of God is able to be experienced in ways we couldn't dream or imagine. Thank you very much.
There was one word in your talk that I did not hear,
okay,
and that was the word engineering. There are 93 accredited environmental engineering programs in the United States alone. It seemed to me that if creation care really wants to make a difference, you need to make some more deliberate alliances with the engineers who have the technology to make a lot of those changes.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for your frankness and sharing with us. Do you have any sense of hope, or are you basically, feeling a sense of despair, or, you know, what would you like to leave us with?
Very good. I'm working out a book, and it's all about hope. And you familiar with Wes Jackson of the Land Institute, Salina, Kansas? Just wrote a wonderful book with Robert Jensen called The Inconvenient Apocalypse. When anyone asks him, do you have hope? He says, well, that depends. Hope in what? And his answer is, no, I don't have hope that we are going to continue to be able to live at this current unsustainable level. He wanted to name the book, The Old Future is Gone. Namely, you know, he has no hope that we can, you know, recover the Holocene, all that we've known there, right? And for me, the one big thing that I think is a project that we have to work on is to deconflate hope from privileged optimism. Particularly in America, we've never had to bother to learn about hope. We're Americans. We can get by on optimism, right? Bottom of the ninth inning, you know, two outs, you know, we can hit this home run. But it's a biblical problem. Project. It's a theological project, but hope doesn't mean what we had been taught it to mean when we are under the conditions of a very comfortable Holocene. So, yeah.
Okay, I'd like to take your message to heart here among us in ASA. I'm thinking You know, the old slogan, be the change you want to see in the world. And I'm thinking of 2 Corinthians 13:5 that says, examine yourselves to see if you're holding to the faith. Test yourselves. And I'm suggesting that maybe we ought to ask the council to institute a survey of members of ASA on environmental practices in their households and just see where we stand. If we identify as evangelicals, well, maybe we should check this out and see if indeed there's some kind of a self-assessment that we could do.
I would say not only what we're doing in the households, but I think another great change in the last 10 years is we did talk about individual behaviors. We talked about carbon footprints. We talked about insulating your house. We talked about changing your light bulbs, right? We're a lot further there now. We need government action. We need action that will probably run counter to what we've held true about capitalism. We're going to confront this saying. I don't know if it was Naomi Klein who came up with it. It's easier to imagine the end of the world than imagine the end of capitalism. We're going to have to confront that. Yeah. So if this survey could also include, you know, engagement with governments and engagement with businesses and societies, boy, that would be good stuff. Yeah.
Great. Well, I think we have to stop there, but thank you very much, Lowell, and for the great idea. We should take action on this as the ASA.
Very good.
Thank you.